Speaking on the program at this time is Brother James W. Boyd.
All right, let's go into chapter 7. Chapter 7, as I announced last week, words of wisdom, particularly as addressed to his son, young men, having to do with warning about evil women. Now, one of the remarkable things, I think, about the text of the Bible is how that the Bible can talk about subjects that are very delicate, but in a most discreet and dignified manner. There are some people that can't discuss some subjects without just seemingly having to get down and wallow in the street terminology and street language and the ugliness and so forth. But the Scripture is not in such language. The Scriptures can talk about the worst sort of bedevilment in the lives of people and the most vicious kind of things and conduct in which people can engage, but always on a plane where it's comprehensible with understanding, but still it is with discretion and with respect. And that's a remarkable characteristic of the inspiration of the Bible. And some things that I don't think need a great deal of belaboring and explaining because they are rather self-explanatory. And here we have in chapter 7 a scene of seduction. And people can and are seduced to do things that are evil. Now, beginning with verse 4, say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinsman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. Now notice, for at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and beheld among the simple ones, and this word translated simple here literally means empty-headed. You may have met people like that, not any of us would ever qualify, but you may have people that look like just got not a whole lot, they just don't think very deep. They're about as shallow as a dried stream. And here among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths. Now here's it's youth that's been particularly warned. A young man void of understanding, not that he's intellectually incapable or anything like that, but he just does not have the knowledge and the wisdom that he ought. Passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house. And in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait of every corner. This phrase, she is loud, the idea there is one who is aggressive and self-willed. This is the type of person that she meets, and one that's very restless, of course. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. This is a very interesting thought here, and I had to consult several commentaries before that knew more than I do, went into this idea that here was a person that was so confident that what they could do just whatever they wanted to do. What they could do would go and make their offerings and pay their vows, and then felt that then, because I have done that, I am at liberty to do anything else I want to do. It's sort of like what Roman Catholicism has taught and practiced, the idea of the sale of indulgences. It's an interesting thing to remember that great St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome was built being financed by the sale of indulgences. And this is the practice that Martin Luther really raised a furor and got him on his opposition to Catholicism was the sale of indulgences. And here he was Luther up in Germany, and here come these Romanist officials, and they're selling indulgences. And he said, "Whoa, back. Well, what is the sale of indulgences?" Well, here comes Brother Byers along, and he's got something he wants to do, and it's not right. He knows it's not right, but he doesn't want it on his conscience. He doesn't want to have to go to quote-unquote purgatory because of it. So what does he do? There's a price list. For this much, you are allowed to indulge yourself in whatever it is that you chose to do. You wanted to get drunk, you wanted to commit adultery, you wanted to steal, why, you just buy. This is the type of person you're dealing with. What kind of conscience does a person have? What kind of integrity does a person have to think that they can make offerings unto God, that they can pay their vows, and then they're just at liberty to do whatever they wish? Now, we realize that's wrong. But let's make a practical application. If we're not careful, we can also develop the attitude because, well, I go to church on Sunday and I give of my means and I read my Bible, and then we don't make much application of our religion into our lives. I heard a man say just the other day, and I think it's very appropriate, and he was a very discouraged individual at the time. And he said, the problem with so many with whom he is working is that they just won't let their faith affect what they do. Now you think about that thought. Their religion just really doesn't affect their lives very much. And that's a sad state of affairs. That's not much religion. It won't affect what a person says and what he does and what he thinks. Well, that's the kind of person this harlot is. Therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. Now this is what the harlot is saying. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. Now notice how wicked and disloyal she is. For the goodman is not at home. That's the husband. He is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. In other words, we can do what we want to. The husband is gone. The likelihood we will not be caught. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield, and with the flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver as a bird hasteth to the snare and knoweth not that it is for his life. Question. Notice it says in verse 21, she forced him. Well, then he's not really responsible, is he? It's her fault. She tempted him. She led him along. She set the whole situation up. She had the whole scene that would just absolutely look like we could do what we wish and nobody's going to know and it'll all be covered. And she forced him, and therefore it's not really his fault, is it? Or is it? He should have refused. Absolutely. I believe we've made the statement here many times before. Nobody can make you do wrong. Now, people can provoke you to do wrong. People can tempt you to do wrong. People can encourage you to do wrong. People can mislead you and you do wrong, and deceive you and do wrong, but nobody can make you do wrong. You do wrong because you decide to do wrong. I do wrong because I decide to do wrong. Nobody can make you say bad words. Nobody can make you engage in immoral behavior. You are the one that ultimately decides to do it. Now, that doesn't excuse what they may have done to lead you to that point. But you're not excused either. And we need to realize, isn't it true? And we're hearing it more and more, by the way, and not just from preachers. You're hearing it from psychologists, you're hearing it from psychiatrists, you're hearing it from educators, you're hearing it from more and more people. We have just got to impress upon people the sense of personal responsibility for their behavior. Quit trying to label our behavior on somebody else. All the time, we're always shifting responsibility. And that's an essential ingredient for the continuation of civilization and the conduct of just society generally. People have got to be held responsible for what they do. Now, there may have been extenuating circumstances and other forces that led them along to that thing, but everybody is responsible for their own behavior, and you are too, and I am too. And this individual here in this seduction scene, though he was certainly misled, tempted, deceived, why, that does not in the least relieve him of accountability for his own conduct. Notice the ultimate result. A dart through his liver, a bird in a snare. It's his life. All right, verse 24. Look at the folly of such a path. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways, go not astray in her paths. For she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. So I think we see here in this scene, this evil, by this evil woman, and this simple-minded, lacking in understanding individual that allows himself to be carried along in that direction, we can see that the wages of sin is very... Does anyone have any comment, or question, or observation that you would like to make concerning some of the things that are mentioned? Right, you can tempt people to go the wrong direction. Won't hurt to take one drink. Well, some folks don't seem to think so, and then they wind up in the gutter. Right, it does make a difference there. Then I hope that you are as familiar with the scene of seduction as you'll ever be. Now, chapter 8. In chapter 8, wisdom is presented here speaking as if wisdom was a person. It tries to personalize, or what's the word I'm looking for? Some of you school teachers help me. Where you, it's a big word and I can't think of it. Personify, that's not the big word, but that's what it is. To personify. You're going to personify. I was thinking of anthropomorphism. I'll stay with personify. You go ahead. I'm going to take that one if I want to, huh? Okay. That's really giving characteristics. What I'm talking about, though, is giving characteristics to God likened to man. So that, I think you are right. Personify. That's the good word. Wisdom is presented as if it was a person and is to speak. And notice in verses 1 through 5, wisdom cries out to be heard. Cries out, please let me be received. It's seemingly strange, but you really, people, you and I included, we're not just talking about others. We have to oftentimes be persuaded to be wise. It would look like that any of us would be wise enough to know that it's wise to be wise. But we're not always that wise. So wisdom cries out to be heard. Notice, doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of high places, and by the way of the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in, at the doors, everywhere, you see. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men, ye simple. Now hear this word, simple is a different word. This is simply one who is lacking in knowledge. O ye simple, understand wisdom, And ye fools, be ye of an understanding heart. Now that's the plea of wisdom to mankind. Just like a parent sometimes pleads with a child. Please listen to me. Sit still long enough and pay attention to what I'm saying. And that's what wisdom is crying out unto you and me, even as we read these words. Now notice the truth of wisdom. Hear, for I speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Notice the characteristics of wisdom here. Excellent things, right things, truth, righteousness, things that are plain and right. In other words, what I'm going to tell you, if you will but pay attention to it, wisdom is saying, will be totally for your welfare. Because there is a difference between right and wrong. And you need to go the way of right. Right. There is a difference between truth and error. And you need to go the way of truth. And wisdom speaks plainly enough for us to be able to make that distinction. Notice in verse 10 and 11 the value placed upon wisdom. Receive my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared with it. This goes back and brings up in my mind that which God told Solomon to request. When Solomon became king, he had a dream. And in this dream, God taught him something. And in this dream, Solomon is asked of God, what is it that you want? Whatever it is that you desire, that's what I will give you. You know, a lot of times I think we give Solomon too much credit right here. We get the idea that Solomon made a wise choice. Well, he did, but he was taught in this dream what to choose. And he said, now what do you want? Is riches, wealth, fame, power, you name it. Here's a blank check, all in the sign, it'll be all yours. What do you ask for? And I didn't even cut grass last week. My ears are not stopped up. What did he ask for?
Understanding heart.
An understanding heart. Why did he want an understanding heart and wisdom? Why did he want that? He knew that. And you know that. That's exactly right. So I can govern this people correctly. These are people of God. I want to know what is right and wise so I can do a good job as a king. Now, here's all this other you can have. Let me just ask you. Have you ever thought, let me raise this. Have you ever, it's silly. It is really silly. Now, I'll acknowledge it's silly. But would you like, any of you, like to go back to being 21 years old again? Anybody? You mean you're content to be an old fogey? And you don't even want to go back and do better?
Better
for what? You see, back when you was 21, that would have been about 1904. Let's see what... I knew that would get a rise out of you. All right. Back to the good old days, 21. Brother Stiles, why would not you... Why would you not, huh? That far. Let's find out how far back he would like to go. You heard about the person got feet on the floor and head in the clouds. You know, that's pretty good. If you can do that, if you get your head in the clouds to keep your feet on the floor, you're getting along. All right, that was a pretty good. I don't remember it. It went by so fast, I know because of the age that I am, I know I went through those years. Chronologically and mathematically, I had to have done it. But nobody would like to go back to 21. Well, I wouldn't either if I had to go back and didn't know any more than I did when I was 21. Of course, I thought I knew most everything, and Mama and Daddy had a whole lot more to learn. But I wouldn't want to go back to be 21 with no more wisdom than most of us have at that age. But now I might get some hands. How would you like to go back to 21 knowing what you know now? Brother, I would. You talk about making things shake, rattle, and roll. I really would. If I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't be where I am now, probably. I would be able to do so many other things and more things. But of course, that's an impossibility. You know, folks, and this is not to flatter you. There's enough brains, by which I mean knowledge and wisdom, in this class to guide this world aright. Because of your experience, your study, you've been able to see, you know from revelation, you know from actual circumstances, and at least at this point, and all things considered, there's just a host of wisdom here. I just think it's a shame that medical science is not able to, you know, you can transfer organs, you can put a new heart, a new liver, new kidneys, new everything. Oh, I wish they could just transfer brains. I've got two or three fellows already picked out who I would love to, when they died, if they just put that in here. Boy, don't you wish you could carry that, but you can't. You just can't transfer that wisdom in that everybody has to develop as best they can along the way. Solomon asked for wisdom. Now, today, if you would come, someone would come to you and had the ability, and then again, this is silly, this is fantasy, this is imagination, but I hope it's thought-provoking. Even with the limited wisdom that we have, I don't think any of us think we're all wise, but we have a limited wisdom. How many of you would exchange what you know, what you've experienced, your knowledge of things, your wisdom, your understanding, would you exchange that for a new car? Boy, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I don't know a whole lot, but I know something. And what I know, I just don't think there's enough money in the world I'd swap it for. And you take somebody that really is wise, he knows that all the gold and all the silver and all the rubies is not worth wisdom. And then, that being true, why is it that we expend ourselves to such an extent trying to grasp the material and don't focus upon, and we're going to get to the source of wisdom down further in the chapter, and don't focus upon gaining wisdom? You know, we sometimes work and put what we've got in a bag, it's full of holes, and we don't lay hold on the things that are of eternal concern and really matter and have stick-to-itiveness about it and stability and eternal value. That's what wisdom, isn't that what wisdom is calling for here? Please listen, because it is worth more than anything else you could ever attain and obtain and possess. Well, a little bit later on, we're going to learn more how to have that. Now, let's look here at some of the characteristics and nature of wisdom. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. And I looked at that. Where does that mean? Anybody know what that means? Anybody like to suggest? Look at that, just look at that phrase there a little bit, Fuquay. And maybe Brother Smith will tell you what it means here in a minute. Look. And find out knowledge of witty inventions. That's a hard one for me to know just what he's talking about. In fact, I finally just gave up and turned to read some others, and they said I wrote it down here in my Bible, there are just many ways that you can learn to be wise. And there are many things that you can, by inventions and imaginations and thought and meditation, come to greater wisdom and can find out knowledge in that fashion. Maybe that's it, but that's a very confused phrase to me, and I'm not wise enough to discern it properly. But anyway, I wisdom dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and a froward mouth do I hate. Folks, contrary to the modern way of thinking of some things, it's wise to hate some things. I'm not talking about just dislike. I'm not just talking about things that make you uncomfortable or they're just inconvenient to you. There ought to be within your heart a hatred, an animosity, and a hostility, an aggressive opposition to some things. Just like there's supposed to be that same kind of disposition going the other way for some things. A person is miserable when he's altogether against things. He's just always opposed to things. And the person is jawed and lopsided who's always just for things, never against anything either. The way of the Lord is both positive and negative. The way of the Lord is both for and against. And the Bible teaches us. Now, the reason I'm stressing this is because we've got the idea, or at least I say we, in talking about society generally, religion we're just looking at it at the broad spectrum. The idea that we ought never be in opposition to anything. We ought to love everybody and be gentle and kind and never take exception and never oppose and always be positive. And I found out that those who say you are to always be positive are very negative toward people that don't think you ought to always be positive. You've got to be positive. We don't dare present to the world a message that doesn't tell what is right. But there are things you need to learn to hate, and I'm sure you have. I'm sure there are many things that you hate, and you need to hate what God hates. And when he talks about wisdom here, and inasmuch as we shall learn that wisdom comes from the source of God, these are things that God hates. Notice verse 14. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. That's what wisdom is saying to us. You want strength? Go to wisdom. You want understanding? Go to wisdom. You want counsel and advice? You want sound wisdom? You go to wisdom. That's where you find it. Now we're going to find out where to turn to get this wisdom, but this is what wisdom produces for you. I read in here a whole lot. And it's not, don't misunderstand, I hope, totally negative toward counselors. But I have never, I lived long enough to remember a few things back when I'm reminded of them. I can remember when people had problems and they didn't have to trot off to a shrink to how to deal with them. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Some psychiatrist, how do we handle that? There's hardly a thing that happens in this world that
you don't hear about
maybe the government or the school or something, set up counselors. Everybody's got to be counseled. Everybody's got to be brought in, and there's just got to be helped over this hump. Can't anybody step over their own hump at all anymore? It just comes to the point that nobody can seemingly take a step unless somebody gets on either side and helps the frail little poor thing over it. Now, I know that there are problems and there are times we need to help one another. We need to sympathize with one another. But, folks, let's mature sometime between now and the grave. Why do we have to run over here to some humanistically trained counselor to tell me how to get along when I can't make my house note? Best thing to do, huh? You talk about a bunch of weirdo screwballs. 99%. How wonderful it is to go to a marriage counselor, and he's already been divorced 3 times himself. Boy! Does he? Does he? Now, if I want to learn how to hit home runs, I'd go see Babe Ruth. Because he did it. He did it. That's the reason. Brethren, let's talk about the church. We run into problems and snags that we sometimes can't handle. Find the strongest member of the Lord's body that you can to work with you. They have seen it through and have seen it through. That's the reason you've got elders of the church. That's the reason you've got brothers and fathers. That's the reason you've got older members of the church. That's the reason you've got people who are skilled in the word. There's the council. And all of these people, my mama and daddy didn't understand me. Why, no. You just be understanding. Nobody can understand you. And so now I go over here to some counselor, and he, boy, you talking about a twisted up mind. When they come out, they don't know up from down and right from left when they get through. Let me tell you, now I know what I'm talking about here because I've studied this stuff. I've had to take it in school, and I deliberately, it was dumb of me because it cost me money to do it. I deliberately took some courses in counseling to find out where are these fellas coming from. I didn't intend to pay a lot of attention to them because I knew they were nuts. Because I knew where wisdom was. I knew the source of wisdom right here. I was wise enough to know that. But I took some counseling courses along that line. Find out. God tells people the difference between right and wrong, and the thing to do is get right. You know, you preachers, you're always making people feel guilty. No, I don't make anybody feel guilty. They're guilty because they're guilty. It's not because I make them guilty. I might point it out to them. And here's the way to get rid of it. You seek God's forgiveness and then you're not guilty. That's what God does. He erases that guilt. You go to one of these twink-headed, humanistically trained counselors, he'll make you feel not guilty too. Make you feel good. Then you can get on Oprah or maybe some of those shows and tell all about what your counselor told you. And how does he do it? He tells you that what you did was wrong was not wrong after all, and so you don't have to worry about it. Now, that'll get rid of guilt feelings, but that doesn't get rid of the guilt. The Lord gets rid of guilt feelings by getting rid of the guilt. Can't you see the difference? Now, I know it must be a traumatic thing. It must be an awful thing. Ooh, the bell's going to catch me before I get this done. I think one of the horrendous things of our society is these drive-by shootings that we hear about. We used to drive by and throw pumpkins, but we didn't drive by and shoot anybody. We drive by shootings. Now, what are you laughing about? You did it too, didn't you? Man, one time went through a window, and old brother, it was months before I ever got to sit down. But anyway, I was a pretty good shot. And people who have witnessed drive by shootings, that must be disturbing. I would hate to see somebody killed in a wreck, accidentally. I'd hate to see somebody murdered. But do I have to go over here to some college-trained punk with his hair hanging down to his navel and his shirt wide open and with his beads or his earrings and let him to counsel me as to how to deal with a thing like that? Lord, help me if I ever do. Or you either. Folks, here's the source of wisdom. Wisdom has counsel. By the way, I'll close with this. Be careful where you get your advice, especially if it's free. And don't ever give unsolicited advice. It's not welcome. But advice that is free so often turns out to be what's worth what you paid for it.